about Suge Knight.
Yeah.
Right?
He shot somebody.
No, no, no. Somebody shot him a few weeks ago, but last night, apparently, he was in his car, and there was a fight, something with Dr. Dre, something, and his friend died because he was behind him when he was pulling out. Ooh, right? Yeah. So he got arrested. He ran somebody over, yeah, and he got arrested. Yeah. He got arrested for murder last night. Mm. I don't think it's murder. I think it's a. I think for me, I think it's a bit of a stretch. It was his friend who died, right? Did you know? Do you know Suge Knight at all?
Yeah.
And yeah. This was so. Now he's in jail, right? Any comments on that right now?
Man, I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah,
I don't know what to say about that.
Gotcha. Well, okay.
I hope that. Oh no, I don't know.
That's
say.
Tough, huh?
Yeah.
Man. All right, let me ask you. You gonna watch the Super Bowl? You a football fan?
Yeah.
All right, who do you like?
Ah, well, I'll leave it up.
It's Seattle
and New England, right? Yeah. So you're rooting for Seattle?
Seattle.
All right. No, that's good.
You know about that Seattle defense? You're talking about that?
Yeah. Seattle's defense, huh? Mm-hmm. Oh, it's tough. Mm-hmm. All right, so your kids are good. You're close to. Let me ask you this. Rumors are, and I'm just hearing through the grapevine, that you and George Clinton are working together.
That's a bit of my life.
Yeah, you've known George all your life. He was here the other day, no?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what are you now, like recently, what do you guys talk about?
They're kind of the same things we did before.
Two legends working together.
Yeah.
Right? For me, that's like, it's like my mind can't handle all that excitement, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we get kind of maybe a little closer than... Two legends. Because I was going to, I can't say right now, but I didn't feel good about some of my people that they say they're my people. And,
it's a trust issue, so you don't trust a lot of people then, is that it?
I trust everybody.
Yeah, that's a problem. You trust too much.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So now, George, you and George are working together at this point?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about that a little bit? Can you elaborate?
I'll tell you what, I'm going to leave in about how far. How long? I got to leave?
Yeah. We got to leave in about 5-10 minutes. Okay. We got to go meet him.
I got to meet him.
All right. So wait, can you tell me, like, on what level you guys are working together, making music together, producing together?
Automatic music.
Automatic.
Yeah.
All right. Are you still recording now?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
All right. How do you feel about that?
Like it's gonna, like I'll feel like that it's it'll be new, because that's the way I am.
And you were born free, right?
Yeah.
Let me ask you this though. I gotta ask, right? It's no secret you've had a history.
I was gonna tell you about the music.
Sure.
But I'll tell you later.
Ah. Well, let me ask you this. It's no secret though that you had a history of drug issues in the past, right? Mm-hmm. Where are you at now with that? Like, are you clean? When was the last time you've used? Right?
I'll tell you what. I got some secrets about drugs that I just came about recently. The reason why I started. And the reason why I didn't really quit, I want to quit, but then I didn't want to quit because I got to tell you about it later. Because it'll add to the AA.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people that were doing drugs, and they were not criminally minded, or they weren't trying to get all messed up. And I kept seeing people falling over and trying to... And I know why I didn't.
Are you more clean now than you've been?
Yeah.
So you're not using anything then?
No.
Gotcha. A little alcohol maybe?
No, not even that yet.
Good for you.
I may have a drink later.
Okay. You may have a drink later.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Celebrate.
Yeah.
All right.
Maybe.
All right. But family's good. Okay. Anything else that you want to share? Right now would be, so you haven't settled on the 5 million yet. Yeah. The reports are that you settled on the 5 million. You haven't settled on the 5 million yet. But you feel that you want more.
No, not necessarily bored, but I want to get things, the settlement changed. There are people that, when they grow older, as I've done, they want to retire. And you never know that until you get older and realize that, I want to retire. I mean, it didn't cross my mind.
Yeah. And now you feel that you're owed that you should be able to retire on your music?
No, I don't want to retire. Yeah, I want to retire music.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to retire and I'm going to keep on playing.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, all right. Yeah.
I feel better when I'm doing something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So now, so.
Minute, 2 minutes.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. So now, what? As far as, what's next for you? So you're just gonna continue to play.
And I'm looking for a new puppy.
Are you looking for a dog?
Yeah.
What kind of dog are you looking for?
Probably a bull mastiff or a cross between a bull mastiff and a great dane.
That's awesome. I'm a huge dog lover. Let me ask you this though. The dilemma with that is to have a Great Dane or a Bull Mastiff in an RV might not be the...
My buddy here, he'll be there.
What's that?
He should be there or he'll be there.
Yeah.
Just let him out.
All right. You're going to do a rescue or you're gonna buy one? Probably a rescue, huh?
I don't know. Just whatever.
All right. All right. Well, listen, I'm excited for you. So, hopefully it works out for you. And,
thank you.
Right? And any words to your fans? Any final words to your fans?
I love my fans.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the reason why I think I'm strong enough to go through that lawsuit.
Fans.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, that was a point where I was going to just quit. And then I thought about the fans and also musicians that need to know how to avoid certain things. They don't mean bad, but they turned into managers and lawyers and many things that they don't know how musicians feel.
Yeah.
I know it's not necessarily. Uh-huh. So I can explain it later because I lived it.
Yeah.
And guys, I want musicians to know that there is a way to keep happy regardless.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. You mind if I get a couple last photos here with this one here? And then let me just make sure I'm good. Hold it. Hold it. All right. So listen. I wish you the best, right?
Thank you.
Right, and I'm gonna be back.
Yep.
Right, if that's okay.
I
hate to invade your neighborhood. You know how that goes, right? Sly, one more time, right here, Sly. Look back. Just look back, Sly. No. All right. Take care, buddy.
I just wanna feel you. I just wanna feel you. it's a family affair. Yeah, family affair. Still checking each other out. Hey, nobody wants to blow. Nobody wants to be left out. You can't leave cause your heart is there. But you can't stay cause you've been somewhere else. You can't cry cause you look broke down. But you're crying anyway cause you're all broke down. It's a family affair.
It's a family affair. She's here, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you very much. Granny, they're expecting you. You're a little late, so come right this way. Start right in, okay?
What? Say it now. Yes. Say it now. Yes. Me and the Ohio fans gonna tell you about a worm. He's the funkiest worm in the world. Okay, say it, fellas.
There's a worm in the ground, yes it is.
Sure how recently Sly has been interviewed by anybody else, but the most recent thing I could find was from 2009.
Yeah.
And it wasn't much.
No.
So we're very lucky to have what we have. We're not going to sugarcoat everything.
No, you can't.
Sly's had an amazing life that's difficult for a lot of us to grasp, especially in the most recent parts of it.
But. Yeah. And our guests say it well. They talk about the influence, and that really is the legacy of Sly. It's not going to be the misdeeds and the bad decisions. It's going to be the music that's left behind.
That's right.
And the standard that he set. There is no standard higher in the Bay Area for music.
That's true. He really went for it. Now, he didn't achieve everything. They didn't achieve everything mm-hmm. they started out with. But it's a lot like a microcosm of the 60s in general, because sure. the 60s had a lot of ideals that that it strived for. It didn't hit them all.
Didn't hit them all.
You know, and then it had to endure the 70s.
Yeah.
And so did Sly. And the 80s and the 90s, and here we are now.
Yeah.
But it started off with some amazing principles that he established for the Bay Area, for, like you said, the standard of musicianship,
right.
the way you carry yourself as a celebrity, the way you answer the call as an artist. And he did it in a very concentrated period of time.
We're talking about an artist that took it upon himself to break ground in diversity, in social movement. I mean, we talked to him. I don't think we captured this directly in the interview, but he talked about purposely choosing hippies. I want to bring these people in because of what they're talking about.
Yeah.
There were no women in bands, in soul bands, before him.
Right.
This didn't exist.
Yeah.
A woman playing an instrument live on stage, not with other women. You know, he is the trailblazer for that.
Now, everybody's going to correct us, and they're going to go, oh, no, what about, please,
sure.
we welcome that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's fine.
Please.
Yeah.
But I can't think of really much. I mean, you brought up the Supremes.
Yeah.
Martha and the Vandellas. Sure. Those were singing groups.
Yeah, yeah.
Of women.
Of women. All women.
Right.
This is a ensemble group playing instruments at the highest level.
I mean, they had in Cynthia Robinson, may she rest in peace, female trumpet player.
Right.
Go ahead.
Name them.
Name a band.
Name them.
That had a chick playing trumpet.
Yeah.
You know, and
any horn.
They were an amazing, and he didn't just choose them because, well, let's get a chick who plays trumpet. Let's get the baddest person at playing these parts the way we want to express them. And it was Cynthia. And that stood for the whole band. He chose the band primarily because of their musical contribution, their interpretation. But he also wanted to express diversity. I mean, the thing about Sly was he was born in Denton, Texas, just to give a little bio.
Right.
But the reason he's important to us was because as a small child, his family moved to Vallejo, California. And he influenced the music of the Bay Area first before he influenced the music of the world. But he influenced it from Vallejo, which meant that for those listeners who are not familiar with Vallejo, the thing that you'll find about Vallejo is that there is no majority here.
Right.
White, black, or otherwise. Anytime that you pull out a group of individuals who contribute to anything from Vallejo, you're going to have a little bit of everybody in there.
Yeah.
Because that's just how it is. And that's what he brought to the world, was an expression that came from the fact that the first band that he was in was, he was hired by a Filipino guy, I think.
Yeah,
in
right,
a band
exactly.
Called the, I remember the name of that band. I'll challenge our listeners to look it up. It's on his Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
So you guys can go look at the Wikipedia page and find all the relevant bio stuff and the details. And by all means, if anybody out there has details to contribute, throw them in the comments, because I don't profess to know everything about Sly.
And you can't capture all of what Sly is.
No.
One of the things that is important to note about the show is we got Sly right in the middle of his legal battle. And that's important to say, because anybody who fights for their legal right as long and as hard with as many twists and turns.
Years.
He's sick of his own lawyers on the night we talked to him.
Yeah, that was the thing. The night that we talked to him, he had been meeting with his lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't stand the lawyers on the other side, but he's already sick of his own lawyers. Because whatever settlement he ends up getting, which, you know, the court started out at $5
million. Right.
But, you know, that's getting appealed and everybody's dragging their feet.
Sure.
And his lawyers are coming in. And
he's won every decision since this interview happened.
That's right.
But he hasn't been paid the
and
money.
Hasn't made a
right.
cent.
Yeah.
And then once there is actually money changing hands, the lawyers get to skim off the top, probably 40% of it.
Yeah, they'll get a lot of it.
So we just hope that he lives long enough to actually see some money. But the thing that we learned about Sly was he really doesn't give a shit.
No, he wants
about
to make
the
music.
Money. He just wants to make music. And if there's anything about that money, is that it will just allow him the freedom to not worry about the day-to-day stuff while he can just make music.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Should we set sail?
Yeah, we should set sail.
Okay.
And I do want to say this one thing. I heard a great idea from all the people that we talked to. Preston Glass said, I want to see the Roots and Sly get together and do something.
Yeah.
So I'll second that.
That would be cool. That would be cool. So here we are, ladies and gentlemen, our 100th episode. Thank you for listening. Thanks for supporting us, everybody. We can't say enough how much we appreciate you being listeners of the show and really supporting us and getting us to 100 shows. It's been amazing. And it really happened in the snap of a finger.
My life is enriched for this show from what you've contributed, from what we've gotten from all the different guests and everything. This is a life-changing show, and to have 100 episodes is something that I'm very proud of.
Yep. So thanks, everybody. Here we go. Sly Stone. Have with us on the Break It Down show today, man,
get out.
I don't even know what to say.
Yeah.
We have talked to some very, very influential and wonderful people, great artists who we value, but we have on the mic today a true legend.
Yes.
And somebody whose influence on my musical taste throughout my entire life has been just profound. Pete put it better than I could have, but I'm going to plagiarize this. We listen to great artists who stole from people who stole from people who stole from people who stole from the great Sly Stone.
Yeah, yeah, man.
That's good. That's a good feeling.
I mean, the Beastie Boys came. You know, I just heard a song on the way in here, and your hooks are in those songs.
Everything.
Yeah, man.
That's good. Yeah.
Arrested Development. They had a whole career based on an album that had probably 12 different samples of you on it.
Yeah.
That's good. That's
good. I don't know how much you keep track of social media, but we've got, once we had it confirmed we were going to interview you, we put it up on our Facebook page. Well, 15,000 people, and possibly 16 by the time I'm saying this, have looked at that, and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them have said, right on.
We
want to hear it. Yeah. And they love you still to this
day. That's good, man.
People have gone crazy, man.
That's good feeling.
Yeah, man. Yeah. They love you. Mm-hmm. So, Sly, I've watched a lot of video prepping up to be ready to talk to you. And I got to say, man, you had some style, man. It was awesome.
Yeah, you're right.
That is a true statement.
Yeah. So we've talked to a lot of people about your influence on them. You know, have you heard of the group Tony, Tony, Tony?
Raphael Sadiq.
Dwayne
Wiggins?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know those names.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. From the very beginning, Dwayne said, when we started Tony, 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 what we wanted to be was Sly and the Family Stone.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You're right.
And this is Tara Kemp and Dwayne Wiggins.
When Tony, Tony, Tony came out, it was like seeing the Family Stone once again.
We studied the Family Stone. I have a big family, so music was in our house all the time. But Have Fun in the Summertime is that makes me think of some times in my house, in our house, and all the family together. We didn't have money or nothing, but we were rich in terms of living.
Yep.
When I hear that song and I think of him, that's what I feel inside. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's the type of stuff he makes people feel. But not only that, he was a part of a movement. It's like, you know, this hip-hop thing, rap stuff, when it came out and stuff. He is the founder. Serious part of the foundation of funk, soul, being so innovative in style and everything else. And you're right.
And also, you know, that message of be yourself.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you for letting me be myself. I mean, it's like the national anthem of musicians in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
You've got to be authentically who you are.
Yeah.
Or don't even try and do this, especially today.
If we can rewind a little bit, the chronology of Sly and the Family Stone, I have to ask because I'm from Vallejo.
Mm-hmm.
What took you out of Vallejo? How'd you leave Vallejo?
I had to go to a gig.
Yeah?
Frisco.
Uh-huh.
And so I had to get out of there.
You had to get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
So was that when you started DJing for KSOL?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no. I played at the Condor in North Beach.
Okay.
And that was before the radio.
And then when you got the radio gig, that was 1960.
I don't remember.
Yeah, it's probably around 61, 62.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, you were shaping music in the Bay Area.
I was busy with music all my life.
Man, no kidding. Yeah, you had mastered several instruments by the time you finished high school. In high school, I was just trying to get laid, you know?
That's cool.
Yeah, man, you were... I don't know if you ever heard about it, but Bootsy Collins says you were the greatest musician he's ever run across.
Hey, Bootsy, huh?
Yeah, man. That's a huge company. I mean, that guy's played with James Brown and Jimi Hendrix. I mean, come on.
Yeah, he did.
And he puts you at the top. Damn.
What's up, Bootsy?
Tell us some stories from, you know, musically, when you were coming out of the Bay Area, our hometown, Vallejo, and... You become famous. What happens? Where do you go? What do you do? What happens when the world opens up?
You start reaching out. You don't know where you're going, but you're not far. It's so far because enough planes and cars to get there. Ooh, and they know you. It's a good feeling.
Yeah. When you have the world at your fingertips, when you guys broke Woodstock. You play Woodstock, you play like 4 in the morning. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
Getting off. I never saw that many people about music for any others and whatever. And getting off a helicopter, like an army helicopter, after a car and then a helicopter and then dropping with all those people.
Yeah.
I was like, we better do the best we can.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah.
It's 4 o'clock in the morning, yeah, and there's still an ocean of people, more yeah, people than you've ever seen.
Yeah.
So you guys were had already broken. You were already
not as good as Woodstock did.
Woodstock broke you open.
Yeah.
James Early. It's because of people like him, and I knew that it was possible for me, and that helped to drive me and motivate me to do it. Not think about doing it, but actually do it.
Thomas McElroy.
Sly Stone gave us hope, and a person that was from our community that had done something really great and was being applauded for it. So it's like, we got this rich tradition here that we got to hold up or we can be a part of. Sly kind of paved the way, along with a whole bunch of other people, for people like Denny and I and Frankie Beverly and Maze even, and the Tonys and hip-hop that was born here, Hammer, everybody else, Too Short. He kind of opened that up. You know, we all learn from each other. And I listened to all the music, and I remember putting the needle back on the drum break on that one song, that Digital Underground. I remember, like, putting the needle back. I was like, that's cool. And then I would listen to that, but I would come back to that drum break. That was, like, kind of a defining moment for me. I remember in my life where I was listening for something specific. Why am I coming back to this part? Why am I doing this? Sly Stone, I love this song. He's got all kind of people in the group. He looks different. He's not really R&B. He's not really rock. He's something different. He's kind of like Miles Davis. He's kind of like some of these other guys that I'm looking at. He's such a strong character. And it really influenced me in a way that made me listen to popular music differently. Even though at that point I didn't understand, and later on I got into jazz, I came back to Sly later and listened to him and understood what he was doing at that time. And then started listening to Larry Graham and some of the other people. And that had a huge influence on the whole Bay Area. I remember when I was a kid watching Sly Stone on TV. I saw him and the band, and I noticed right away he had a white dude, a woman, and just different colors of people in his band before I noticed anything else. And I had never seen that before. I was like, who is that? And then I remember looking at an album cover sometime later in my house as a kid. I said, oh, that's the dude. This is Sly Stone.
Growing up in Vallejo, you couldn't escape racial integration.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was there.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like having a racially integrated band back then?
It was planned.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It was a conscious thought for you to bring that to the world.
Yeah, we thought it was a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, another thing, I mean, and we took this into our fold, too. Those groups are always into the community. They gave mm-hmm. back. I mean, it's like the community gave back to them, too. It was me growing up in West Oakland. I lived across the street from the Infirmary Park. Mm. The Black Panthers used to do a lot of rallies across it. So he was pretty much one of them. You can call him damn near the house band for when they would do those rallies and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So he was always a part of the community. I guess that's a little why I do the things I do, because that's what I've seen.
Civil rights movement comes along, and you get to say, well, we've already been doing it.
Yeah, we did. I remember I was going to march, and I got in front of the line, and I realized that I had a .32 caliber. I forgot about Martin Luther King everything.
Right, because you were going to march.
Yeah, but I got scared.
Yeah, mm-hmm. .32 automatic on my person. So, wow. And I guess that's probably one of the reasons why you didn't have a much more visible presence in the civil rights movement.
Yeah, because I went in my mind, that's why they were going to hurt us.
Uh-huh.
In my mind was, I better get the fuck up out of here.
Wow.
So that's why.
What civil rights movement was trying to accomplish, they could just look at your band
mm-hmm.
and see it in action
yeah.
and see that it was beautiful and that everybody was better
mm-hmm.
for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were going to march, and you had a...
Yeah, I myself was going to get in front of everybody. So I get in the front.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at those people and throwing that weapons. And I realized that I had my 32.
Yeah.
That was just subconscious to have it.
Right. Because that's what it was about back then.
Yeah.
I mean, you still did grow up in Vallejo.
And, yeah.
And Vallejo is already, has always been what it is.
Yeah, Vallejo's pretty harsh.
You had to survive it.
Yeah.
You were on every show that someone who had a career in music could be on. You know, you guys were on American Bandstand, Soul Train, all that. You took over the Mike Douglas show.
Yeah.
We were watching the Mike Douglas show. We saw clips from the Mike Douglas show. Who was that was on there?
On the Mike Douglas show?
Yeah, with you.
I had Richard Pryor.
Richard Pryor. Yeah.
We made him play drums.
Yeah, I had Muhammad Ali.
Muhammad Ali, that's right. It's a good thing you didn't make him play drums.
You know, you and Muhammad came at the social movement from a different angle.
Mm-hmm.
You seem to be much more inclusive in trying to say, hey, we got to work together.
Mm-hmm.
And Muhammad came at another viable way of saying, we got to get our equal part, you know?
Mm-hmm.
People look to you guys for answers. How do you guys reckon that between each other?
Muhammad Ali, he likes rhyme, but not with any substance, as far as I can see.
Okay.
And he started to rhyme, and he started talking about, you know, about black people, white people, and told me that I should, I forgot what he's saying, but I didn't like it. So I had to ask him to be quiet. I mean, he got mad.
I remember that. Yeah, that's on the show.
Yeah.
But I encouraged him.
Yeah.
To be cool.
You encouraged him to be cool.
Yeah.
Hey, everything is so good. He makes a little money. I make a little money. But his brothers and uncles of mine are catching hell and hungry. And we on TV.
Yeah.
Like everything is so rosy. And I can't go off.
Yeah,
I'm guilty.
Yeah,
there's
Muhammad,
too many wise people.
Muhammad. I'm talking now, man. Okay, the only thing we can do for brothers is to do what we're doing, be examples, and to be happy, and to be intelligent like you are and like you always say.
Thank you. In the diss, I went through the debate with the brother on television, you know, or even clown with him on television, but behind the doors, we can have a good time, but not with all the people watching.
Yeah, we can.
Wait a minute.
We'd be phony.
Now, wait a minute. That's not being honest, what you just
that's
said.
That's what I'm saying. We'd
clown
be phony.
Behind doors.
We'd be phony if we didn't do the same thing.
I had a clown.
Not here with
no, no. You just said clown.
If I had
clown
in a clown,
right, don't you agree with me?
Yeah, we're going to clown around. If you don't like it, I'm going to whoop you.
That says it all right there.
Yeah.
You encouraged Muhammad Ali to be cool. It took some guts to do that because if...
you have to do that when he just carried Ali.
Sure.
You have to wake up.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Because there he is. He's a big presence. He'll mow right over everybody in the room and really just kind of take over all the energy if you don't stand up for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What's your greatest high? What's your highest moment that just sticks out in your mind?
Have the group rehearse it, probably.
Your highest highs happen during rehearsal.
Yeah.
So when it...
Corey's like, what?
When
yes.
It's,
no, I say it all the time.
Grab a mic, man. Grab a mic.
There's some cornbread over here. I've always said, and I tell people, that rehearsals are better than shows.
Mm-hmm.
Because you get that first high, that first time you run down the whole song and it sounds great.
Yeah.
It's not like that at a show.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Corey, your episode of our podcast was last week.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying.
Why do you want to bring up old shit?
But I've always said that.
Yes, you have always said that. So how about this? I'll ask you this, Sly, because we're in Corey's presence, and Corey's played with you. And one of the things that he mentioned was that during rehearsal is when you really get to flex and you really get to try things and you get to – because when you're out in the – you have an obligation to your audience, right? So you have to pull it back just a little bit, make sure you're playing safe. You're not going to reach for the most acrobatic thing to do musically. You're going to just take it back just a little bit to make sure that you don't mess up in front of your audience. Is that why you find rehearsal to be more stimulating than anything else?
Well, yeah, but the guys, my band was the major high.
Yeah.
Just playing with people.
Yeah.
The band, they have the band.
Yeah.
Because they were every day.
Yeah.
Until it was, you know, you can't even make mistakes.
Yeah. Well, you guys were always known for your incredible work ethic and just how tight the band always was and just how together your show always was. With that caliber of performance and delivering it night after night after night for so long, what happened with the band? I mean, I know what this is. These are things that happen to all bands. But how did it happen to Sly and the Family Stone?
When we started going off?
Yeah.
I got a rumor passed to me that I was going to kill Larry.
Wow.
The bass player.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I did all the time was protect everybody in the band.
Sure.
I mean, every time, a lot of fights. Every fight.
It was Sly and the Family Stone. You were the paternal figure of the band. Yeah. You were the leader.
Yeah.
That's how it started, the unraveling of the band?
That's what's in my head.
Yeah.
I was going to try to go get him to work. The fuck were you talking about?
So this was a rumor that was passed to you and one that probably altered everybody's behavior before you heard about it.
Well, everybody else in the band, they treated it like nah, he was sad. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. But how did Larry take it?
He's gone. Couldn't track it in front.
And that was the, wow.
Yeah, I guess he still said it.
From Huey Lewis in the News, Johnny Colet.
I actually had the honor to introduce Sly to Huey. My God, it was probably in the late 80s. Sly still had that gleam in his eye. That may be the last time I saw Sly for the post-Grammys event. So that's the last time we saw each other. I had a fledgling band in Marin County. It turns out they wanted to be a rock band, and we were a little too funky for them. Larry and I got unceremoniously released from our band, Soundhole. A couple weeks later, and don't ask me how, John got a seat playing keyboards with Sly. And Sly lived right up the hill in Novato, California. I'm just green with jealousy, I didn't have two nickels to rub together at the time. He said, well, hold on, maybe something's going to happen here. It looks like the horn section needs some help. And I don't know who was in the band at the time, but one day John comes by and he says, come on up, man. Fly wants to meet you. Our mutual ground, I guess you might say, was both Sly and I went to Vallejo Junior College. And we both held David Folick, the music teacher there, in high regard. The fact that I went to Vallejo JC and went through Frolic at the slide that lit up and said, I got to meet the guy, And I went up and we hung out at his place up in Novato for about an hour or two and did whatever people did back when they were in your early 20s. And, 3 hours later, we said goodbye and Sly said, John Cola, you're in the band, man. So, but he was convinced I was the right guy. And that was the beginning of a few years of a crash course in what not to do in the music business, I guess.
Yeah.
No, it was a lot of great time. And you were in a bit of a challenge at the time. I think Sly just released High on You not more than a year before, maybe. And it didn't do so well, I think. I don't think he released two or three singles off it. And his manager at the time had put some pressure on it to get this. It's all about branding. Mm-hmm. And Sly Stone wasn't branding. Sly and the Family Stone was a brand. And so I guess the pressure was on Sly to put a band back together and be Sly and the Family Stone. That's what he set out to do. Mm-hmm. And I think when John and I came in, he really found something to hang his hat on. I'm not just patting myself on the back, but musicians were coming and going. We had these three guys from Sacramento called themselves the Chocolate Chips, and they were kind of the rhythm section, bass, drums, and guitar. And I don't know if those guys knew it, but their job was on the line a little bit. And Cynthia was kind of in, but she'd only show up if she was sure rehearsal was going to happen because she had a little baby. And somehow we managed to squeeze it off and get it together and get a record out and go on tour for a year or so. The record probably Heard You Miss Me While I'm Back. I think I can say with some confidence I might be the only white male that ever sang on a Sly Stone session. So I was pretty honored about that. I think Sly hit the button and said, John Cole, you sing it with him. That's one I like to remember. I think I can say now I understand that the effort was to get the brand back and get Sly back on the charts and back out on the road. And we had a ball on tour. My fondest memories, Sly had this mandate put on him that you got a tour. That's just the way the music business is. The manager at the time laid that down. So we went out with the Ohio Players and Bob Womack and Harold Melvin, the Blue Notes, when Teddy Pendergrass was singing with him, and the Barquets and Rufus. And I just had the time of my life. It's just a blast. So we opened for P-Funk for about 2 or 3 weeks. And I get to meet all the guys in P-Funk and jump on stage at the end of their set for the big finale. And, you know, they're fantastic memories. Thanks, Sly.
When you play with Sly, how do you characterize his musical gift?
Well, I'd say he's one of the best songwriters and charismatic characters I've ever had the honor of being in their presence. He had something that, you know, is something you only see, you know, in people like Sam Cooke and Marvin Gaye. There's a magic and a charisma that carries through, and you become charmed. And that was part of the whole thing. I'm sure there was a power struggle early on when Sly's charm started to take over, but he earned it. He was a DJ. He was jumping back and forth, spinning records and trying to start a band. He was doing three things at once when he was young, and he earned that. And he was really good at it. Now, he wrote for the Times, and he wrote all the right stuff. He was getting nerves for white folks and black folks, and, you know, that's why we remember those songs to this day.
That's what he said.
My goodness.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're making all that music. You're the hit of the party. Everything revolves around the good time. I mean, Sly and the Family Stone is a rolling good time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, prior to you walking in the room for this podcast, we had the pleasure of hanging out with you a couple weeks ago. And we were both profoundly affected by a number of things that you said.
Mm.
That's really why we wanted to have you back and have a microphone in front of you.
Good.
So, yeah, that, I mean, yeah, we feel like it's important.
It is.
It is. Sly, will you tell us about the first time you performed in front of a live audience?
Yeah, but it was a church song.
Okay.
It was a church song in Oakland Auditorium. And what's the name of Brother Joe May? And you ever heard of that? No, not very well. Anyway, church groups, Blind Boys and all those people. And I went and they put me on a table to sing. I sang, and when it was over, when people, they were happy, and I wasn't ready for that. They started coming at me, running, and getting happy out of here, and I got up and ran in the back. I got off the table and ran.
Your first live performance, you took off running.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.